Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to this edition of Thunderdome Metal Reviews. We're doing a grab bag, courtesy of my choosing, but we have a momentous moment. The gang is back together. All four of us are back here. We're back to full strength here at Thunderdome. How are you doing tonight, gentlemen?
We're crossing all four streams. All four pistons are firing, all four barrels. I don't know, I'm just going to keep saying things with four. Transformers.
I mean, being back together is a guilty pleasure.
I can't help but think that there's something wrong about this. Something very, very wrong.
Somebody's forgetting something they had to do. Like, oh, shit. Was that the night?
You know, our own wedding or something. Yeah, no, yeah.
But Thunderdome is life. That's all I got to say.
Life is just a commercial for death, Tracy.
It is. On our road to the end. We're doing a grab bag of my choosing. And part of that choosing is a guilty pleasure. What makes you happy? What is something that kind of out there, you're like, I like this. Kind of don't really know why, but I do. What is just something that just, what you would consider your guilty pleasure? First up the bat for us is Mr. Lindsay's here. And he's got this Vermilion Whiskey's Crimson and Stone.
I'd like to point out this is another band that clearly Ben is actually in. Which he's not going to admit to, but I mean, just everything about
current, current or former member. I would say former member.
Considering we had like an album that was done completely by Gabe, I don't know what we're talking about.
Cleveland, my basement, Six Winter.
The dude wears a mask. I mean,
Oh shit! Yes, we're getting ahead of ourselves, everyone. I'm sorry. Control yourselves, everyone. It's too soon. Yes. The band Gabe is in band is coming up.
quote unquote band.
But this is the band that Ben is in.
I don't know if he's in it, but he definitely has songwriting credits.
He is it.
Yeah.
I don't even know why you're guilty about this, but why this? Why do you feel guilty about this situation?
I actually hadn't listened to this album when I picked it for the guilty pleasure, so that's probably the guilty, but it sits in that pocket of Southern
Rock.
Don't
do my homework.
Wow. Right.
Southern rock influenced metal, as heard by Texas Hippie Coalition or Nashville Pussy or various other bands that we've done.
Rob Zombie and his
one of my various projects.
One of my various other projects. And I saw a video for it. I had heard a couple of tracks off of this, but I was unfamiliar with the band. And we know that spiritually, I do love Louisiana, and this is a band from south of New Orleans. And so, yeah, I chose this Vermilion Whiskey Crimson and Stone, released on May 26th of 2023. It is the third studio album, has a runtime of 41 minutes and 9 seconds. The band is Thaddeus Reardon on lyrics and vocal arrangement. And he also played lead guitar. He played rhythm guitar. Ross Bowen plays lead guitar. Jason DeCoux plays bass. And the drummer for this band is Wade Perkins. And I don't know who produced this album. So,
I mean, you, obviously. You just don't remember it.
Yeah. So that's why I was gone so long.
I was the only person this week who didn't pick an album from 2023 or 2022, which was interesting. All of you picked. I was like, wait, was this supposed to be a new release thing when I looked at your titles? But so you've not heard their old music.
I have not. No, this is the only thing I was familiar with, like two songs off of this album, but I hadn't heard the entire thing.
I played some of it. I played some of it. It sounded a lot like this.
But like I said, I in general like this subgenre, I guess. And so I thought I'd give this a try. As the person who probably likes Southern rock the most out of any of the four of us.
That's true.
It definitely does scratch that itch of what I would consider a perfect Lindsay record almost. Just kind of like, yep.
This 41 minutes.
It's under 45 minutes. Got a little bit of groove to it. Got a deep baritone voice to it.
Some sludginess, like some down-tempo shit. So you had some groove alternating.
Straight from Louisiana. I mean, this is a Lindsay record all over. Like, I feel safe to say this album probably made Ben go, I'll check out the other two albums on top of it.
I'm going to also add deep sadness. That's in the mix here. And decay, right? Like just that whole, for the people that brought you, I Heart God comes. these motherfuckers. But I certainly like this. I am maybe the second easiest mark for this, given how much I love Corrosion of Conformity and Down and Clutch and the Credence. So, you know, this was a no-brainer. Even the down-tempo stuff is like that. See what I did there? Down-tempo. I know it sounds like down, you know, just the crowbars happening, crowbar-y. You know what I'm talking about. There's like down-tempo in a weird way that Tracy probably would be into. And then there's down-tempo in dirty, dirty Louisiana bass. So I enjoyed this album a lot. I wouldn't say it was innovative per se, but I don't think they would either. I feel like they probably went to the Dimebag Darrell school of why are we doing this? It's the vibe I get. If you know what I'm saying, like, you know, they're living their best life, I get, or well, they're living a life.
Yeah, for sure on that. No, I don't think there's anything innovative about this. Do I think it is like, it's probably not the best example of the subgenre. I mean, I don't think it's like the world's best album or anything, but I did quite enjoy it. But again, I'm an easy mark for this. These are just guys playing music that I think with lyrics that represent the lives of the community that they're from, but they are definitely not, you know, trying to break new ground or, you know, push the envelope in any way that I can perceive.
I mean, I think I sort of agree with some of what you, David, and Ben were saying about the originality. And I thought the musicianship on this album was really great. And what I think I appreciated the least was that it was about 50% of that Southern Rock volume 2024 and 50% cool, sludgy, just really actually heavy stuff. Like they smuggled it in almost, because like if you're listening to this straight through, you're not going to know that there's any sludge on it until you get there. Or you happen to know the band before. So I thought that was a pretty interesting way of presenting themselves, precisely because it's really 50% of the album that is musically challenging for, you know, general audience, and 50% is absolutely not. So like, I think it was like, they hook you in and they get to play what, you know, maybe the more interesting piece of it, if you stay along for the ride. Or
I think that's 100% true. Because I don't like sludge very much, as you know, but this, I'm like, okay, we're in the bayou, and then suddenly weird things are happening, but it's too late.
They may not be doing anything interesting, but I think that in comparison to the first half of the record, it's much more interesting melodically and, you know, harmonically, and just in terms of, like, the emotional range they got there. Like, you've heard most of the stuff before on the first half. In the second half, it's like, oh, you know,
I agree with that.
The tone sort of shifts, and you can feel that pain. Like it, you know, it may be sort of masked in the first half where it's like, you know, fairly typical and straight ahead, but it's there. So I really appreciated that.
My favorite song was in the back half and one of the heaviest. Yeah. I agree with that.
And I'll agree with what you guys are saying. Like, cause this album, like the first up to, I think, Stone Interlude, man, you could probably say my family, like the classic rock people, could probably get on with this album. And then it comes in like, oh, you've bought in on the first six tracks. And then that back third of it, they're like, all right, let's throw you some curveballs and see how you handle it and see how it sits. And I agree that it's not necessarily like breaking new ground or anything like that. But what they do is very much within well-worn grooves. But it's in the way that they do it, I think, kind of adds like a nice touch to it, in that like people who come to this album based off like the first couple tracks, because it's a very well-known quantity there in terms of stylistic when what you're listening to, that when you get to those back halves, it might push them a little bit more and kind of like where they typically go, but they're already in enough that it's, I don't think it's so jarring like it would, you would bounce off of it unless they came to that like first, you know what I'm saying?
So I hadn't really thought of it until you guys are talking about the way that it kind of changes in the back half, and it reminds me some of going and seeing Hank 3 in concert, where he would do this like country set. And then he would come out and meet the crowd and thank them for coming and everything, and say now he was going to do his punk/metal set. And if you weren't here for that, to go ahead and leave, and he appreciated your, you know, your patronage and all that stuff. So this isn't quite that much of a stylistic shift, but it does kind of remind me of that. Now that you guys have mentioned it, I don't know, I just thought that was worth mentioning.
And I wouldn't be surprised if Hank 3 or Hank, any of the Hanks, are not on one of the guys who did this band on their repeat listens. Like, there's definitely been some Hank in their life.
Yeah. I mean, there's no way that they are, just giving where they grew up, there's no way they're unfamiliar with the
words. And you're one part of the writing team here. So, yeah, you've obviously heard Hank in your life. We stopped and paid homage back in 2021.
Cool. Allegedly.
Can't confirm or deny, huh?
I've never seen you and them in the same place at the same time. So, I mean.
Well, you've never seen them, and you didn't know about them until like this week. So that's really not saying anything.
Exactly. You just,
but we knew about you before this week.
Fair enough.
They really struck me as two different records. Like, that's the first thought that I had, you know, listening to this. And it's like, yeah, on the one hand, it's clever. On the other hand, it's disappointing. And on the other hand, you wonder, like, what are they doing as a project? Like, do they think they can pull the same thing on the next record? Like, you know, do like the first half, you know, kind of for the normies and the second half for like, you know, the freaks. Like, I don't know what their game plan is, but it would interest me to know like why they did it this way and whether they whether they're going to continue to do it that way.
I mean, it may be a thing to do on other albums.
When I listen to one before this, I will listen to it with that in mind. Who knows? Maybe a new formula. Well, yeah, I don't know, pretend to know their catalog well enough, but interesting.
Just reading the blurb that they have on Bandcamp, it does seem like this was intentional, that they set this up to be what they call a trip on a journey through a hard-driving rock and roll album with some obvious Louisiana flavor tinged with more melodic sonar vibe throughout. So I guess they did set it up that way so that it would kind of, I don't know, necessarily bait and switch. I don't want to use that term, but ease listeners into the heavier stuff.
I, as a Gen Xer, and this is, I think, hard to imagine for people who only think in terms of single songs, I greatly respect album arrangement. I'm not going to say it's a lost art, because obviously artists are still trying to do it, but I don't think it is the way people interface with music most of the time anymore. But, you know, I think it's definitely intentional. I think people think about this shit a lot.
Oh, yeah.
Even Limp Bizkit, I think, thought about that in that six-hour-long album.
That's a big claim, David. You ready to back that up?
I'm not sure I am. I'm like, wait, that's what they came up with? I don't know, man.
It's okay if you're not. I was just, you know.
I'm going to die on this hill. Hot dog-flavored hill. Anyway, songs? Is that where we're at?
Emotionally? Yeah,
it's your circus, your monkeys. If you want to start us, Benjamin.
Sure. I mean, I like, in truth, I'm going to say I like them all. That is not as ringing of an endorsement as it is sometimes when we say that, because I don't think, you'll see when I give this album a grade, because I don't think any of these songs are great, but I could listen to all of them over and over again, which is
very blast. I agree with that.
So, I mean, you know, I can just chill and, well, you can chill and drink to all of these. That's kind of the point. But I can really just chill and drink to the Southern rock stuff. And then I can get like really into, as the dude who loves sludge, that second half. I do like the second half better. But again, I can get down with all of these. I do think the album's a tad long, if being over 40 minutes, but whatever.
Oh, you could have made the interlude shorter.
Yeah. They could have taken out Stone Interlude.
They could have just taken it out. But no, I think they thought it was on purpose. If Gabe's theory is correct, that's why it's there.
No, I agree. And I do think it serves a purpose on the album. And I don't hate it. It's just like, you know.
Tracy, is there a term for that? A thing you need to do with?
I think it's like palate. I don't know. Maybe it's like.
Yeah, but what are we doing to the palate?
A palate purifier? Is that
palate purifier. That sounds right.
Is it a palate cleaner?
Wait. Maybe cleanser is the word. But is it like a thirst cleanser? I don't know.
It's the thirst mutilator.
It's got electrolytes.
It's got what plants crave. Well, what I crave are these songs. Yeah, this, I agree with Ben. I don't think anything on here rises to the level of excellent, though it is way better than any album I've ever put out. But they're all very listenable, and I really liked the turn. As I said, my favorite song is at the end. I think the first run, Down on You, all the way through Good Lovin'. I mean, that's, you know, as Tracy said, you could play that in a biker bar here and it would be fine. But Atrophy, that song is badass. And I think the heaviest on here, I like that song a lot. And I think Hollow, the closer, even for as down tempo as it is by then, they convinced me. I don't know. It's I was willing to take that ride. So I enjoyed this record, and especially the back half, I thought was really interesting.
I'll go next. So I'm like Ben and David, and we'll say like this album's good, but not great. All the songs in here, but it all comes together pretty solid. Well, I'd just take the ride. Honestly, for me, it was a take a ride album. Just
sure.
It comes across relatively short. Like, I don't feel like it takes the full 45 minutes to get through it kind of deal. And so, I mean, if you like one for the most part, you're going to like them all. And just if you dig it, just go for it. I mean, it's nothing like going to drive you insane or distract you also.
There's not a track with Ben Stiller looped endlessly tackling. Is that not a thing? That's
no.
That's what I was missing.
That's what's missing. See, that's how you get an album to an hour and 15 minutes. Is that kind of shit? Anyway, sorry. Again, I'm taking us ahead. I'm taking us too far. Gabe, where are you on this? I think I guess based on what you said earlier.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much the same thing that I said earlier, which is from the Stone Interlude onward is the only part of the record that I feel the need to listen to ever. You know, I think if I'm going to listen to this stuff, like the first half, I'll put on Creedence, or I'll put on like some other stuff that, I don't know, they've done it before, or they've done it better the first time, and it's just not special to me, but I can see why people like it.
Or the Creedence.
Or the Creedence, indeed. Oh, that brings us to David's pick. Limp Bizkit's Chocolate Starfish and the Hot Dog Flavored Water, y'all, from October 17th of 2000. The y'all was added purposely by me. It's not actually part of the episode.
Is it, Nathal?
It's implied. It's silent. It's silent.
Y'all.
It's their third studio album released on Interscope Records, produced by Terry Date. 75 minutes and 8 seconds runtime. Doesn't feel like a second less than that either.
yeah.
Fred Durst provided the vocals. Wes Borland provided the guitars and did the cover art. And he did sing Snake in Your Face. TJ Lethal, our boy, on turntables and samples. John Otto on drums. And he provided vocals. It's like that, y'all. Sam Rivers on bass. And now for the additional musicians. So Scott Borland played keyboards. Exhibit did vocals on Get Your Groove On. Scott Weiland did vocals on Hold On. DMX, Redman, and Method Man provided additional vocals on Roland Urban Assault Vehicle. Rick Keller played bass guitar on Roland Urban Assault Vehicle. Stephen Jenkins, Ben Stiller, Mark Wahlberg, and Rob Dyrdek were the spoken word on the outro. Run did vocals on It's Like That, Y'all. Trent Reznor received writing credits for samples on Hot Dog. Eric B. and Rakim received writing samples for samples on My Way. Lynn Frey, Don Henley, and Joe Walsh got music credits for Living It Up. And yeah, there is an interesting thing. There's a track on here that I don't think is on has been replaced on streaming. So if you listen to it on streaming, there's a track called Get Your Groove On, which I think has been replaced with a Dope Road mix version as opposed to the original version because of a lawsuit.
I was wondering about that because I had the CD, because of course I did. I was that asshole. And I was like, why is this a remix? I thought that I caught that, but I couldn't remember what it originally sounded like because it's been a hot minute.
It has been.
Oops. That sounds right. That tracks. Eddie Van Halen pistol whipped that track, so they had to take it off.
Indeed.
I didn't even think about that. Wow.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So this is an album, y'all. Look it up.
It is an album.
I interpreted the homework as Guilty Pleasures are the thing that you feel guilty listening to it because you know it's button metal. And you know many of the people who liked it at the time were huge assholes. Probably you also. Like, is it an album that causes me some shame that I liked it and still like it? Yes. Like, this is the sort of thing that...
Is your shame going to be apparent while grading it?
Some, I don't know. It's not the Mona Lisa, okay?
Do you feel us judging you right now?
I mean, it's too late. No more than usual. A, no more than usual. And B, like...
It's true.
It's, the damage is done. When I assigned my fifth quartiary new metal band or below tertiary,
the dam
was broken. I committed so hard, and you know, I understand that this is the first album after the Woodstock 99 debacle, which they didn't cause but they did not help. Needless to say, Fred Durst is a huge tool. Wes Borland is at the peak of his powers here. I mean, they don't have to be complicated, my god, but between his stage show which I admit I saw. I don't want to talk about it. Anyway, I've seen them, and just, you know, you want a riff that makes you both groove and break shit. I guess those are their two food groups, essentially.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And has anybody listened to their album after this one, Results May Vary?
Yes, I have. Tracy, I took this entire... This is what I mean. I don't just dabble in Limp Bizkit. I was on the ride, every one of those fucking albums.
Well, I was going to say, because, you know, I listened to Results May Vary when it came out as well. Sure. And What's More and Leaves in between those albums, and there's a drastic drop-off in Riding Cool.
Everyone, every ranking, everything I've ever read concurs. Yes, it's not as good.
Yeah.
He's back by whatever, Golden Cobra or whatever. No, he's already back on that EP with the propaganda thing. I think it's called The Propaganda or whatever. That's pretty good. Yeah, the minute he returns, it gets better again. This is one that, like, Fear Factory, we don't have to go far down this rabbit hole. It was shitty when Dino left, but those two albums were still pretty good. Wes Borland out of this situation was not great.
Well, he's the only artist in the group. I mean, I guess you could say that.
That's fair.
You know, DJ Lethal is providing, you know, some of the artistry here, but I think the creative voice of the group was Wes Borland.
I agree with that.
Anyway, he's still here, so we don't have to talk about it like he's not.
I know, he's like, and then he died. No, he's still doing it. But this album, I listened to this album a whole lot in 2000. You know, and the Roland video was filmed in the Twin Towers, like right before, like it was one of the last cultural things I remember before that unfortunateness. So that sort of burned into my brain a bit. Man. Exhibit, y'all, he's pimping your ride. Fucking Wu-Tang, Redman. I mean, you know.
Like, I heard this album just so much, like on my own listen through, and also it's like, this is probably my brother's favorite album of all time.
My
older brother's favorite album. So, like, he'd pick us up from school, and this album was fucking playing in his car. Like, it was on repeat, nonstop. And, of course, we grew up big-ass wrestling fans. Undertaker coming out with the Rollin'. They performed at WrestleMania 17, was it?
Jesus. I'm just trying to imagine
2001, somebody. Yeah, 17.
I'm trying to imagine someone for whom, like, this album is their, like, white album or whatever. Like, this is the album.
Right, that here. Is people who graduated... Like,
had to be someone
2000 to 2002. Like,
yeah, there. I think we've talked about this before when we did the Limp Bizkit album that we did, which I think was, did we do $3 Bill, y'all?
Significant Other.
We've not done $3 Bill, y'all.
They were legitimately the largest rock band in the world at this time.
100%.
Woodstock 99 happens, and like that hurts them. And then, like, they turn this around really quick from. Significant Other, but man, they were still like right, because the Roland video was everywhere. I too at the time was a huge wrestling fan, and the Undertaker thing going on. We listened to the shit out of this album. It's not complex, man.
This is
you know, you can say it's butt metal or the lowest common denominator. I would agree with that. I don't think it's like as cynically so as something like Five Finger Death Punch.
I agree with that.
Or something like that, because I really do think that for better or worse, and probably worse, that Fred Durst actually believes he's saying something with this stuff.
Oh, he 100% does. No, I will die on that hill. Yeah, no, yeah. He knows he's a wanker, and he's very serious about, like, it's... You don't get pistol whipped by Eddie Van Halen just dabbling and being this much of a douchebag. No, I think he believes all this shit. I don't know. No, he's.
Well, I think the worst part is really that he takes himself seriously as a rapper, which he's not good at. And like I think that's the most sort of like upfront and also just bad thing about this record.
I mean, I'm going to push back a little bit on that, because I think of like if it's a very small pool. But he's the biggest fish in that new metal pool of all those white boys and those new metal bands, Jonathan Davis and everybody else trying to do little rapping loads. He was the best. And like he would like get in there and do his shitty rapping with like real people who could rap, like Exhibit.
No, I mean, Urban Assault Vehicle. You see it on this. You see it on this album.
Like,
he's not as good as them. You are not wrong.
He's not as good as them. But
I would have to say, of what I remember of stuff on previous records, this is worse than that. He rhymes like the same word with the same word, like multiple times.
No, I know. I'm like, damn it, Fred.
but
it's the flow more than the lyricism that I was talking about. But
I suppose, enough. But I find his flow really annoying, and that's a personal subjective thing. Sure. Like I find this like high pitched like thing that he just like modulates into the higher pitch. It's like it really is grating, and that is totally separate from what he's saying. It's just how he's saying it, and I do think that some of the beats are cool on here. As annoying as I find some of the lyrics and sort of like the, you know, tough guy posing, it's just like the main subject of every single one. Like the fact that they, you know, gave writing credits away like they were candy. I mean, there's a reason for that. Those songs are good. What's it like? Take a Look Around from the Mission Impossible soundtrack. You're never going to forget that riff or that sample as it appears there. Sticks in your...
It's use of Life in the Fast Lane from the Eagles. I mean, they really do a good job of implementing samples.
They do.
In this
album.
It's
both shameless, but very fun.
Further Down the Spiral album, yeah.
Indeed. they announced they're going to do it at the beginning, essentially.
Yeah. Well, and I think that was really smart on them to like avoid, other than the one lawsuit that they got, to like get it out as quickly as they did. I think I think I read somewhere that was Trent Reznor signed off on it so that there wouldn't be a lawsuit. And I guess he probably realized that as big as Limp Bizkit was, that this was going to make him some money, even if it was, some people consider that to be a diss track, which I will admit that it sounds like a diss track. So it probably is, even though Fred Durst has said that it's not. But anyway, yeah, I mean, DJ Lethal is like, it's been a DJ for a real rap band. So again, like Fred Durst, for all his wankery, knew enough to surround himself with people who could professionally and not even professionally, like competently and lend credibility to what he was trying to do. Whether it's the hip hop beats or Wes Borland's guitar wizardry, which I do agree that probably is, and also like his art direction with all the costumes and stuff that he wears. And then like the rhythm section is solid. I mean, there's nothing like groundbreaking in the bass and the drums, but they're good and they lock in. They provide the bedrock for Borland to go off and for the samples and stuff to hook. So yeah. You know, this is I can see why you call this a guilty pleasure, David. But honestly, there's a reason that they got as big as they did. And I do think that as a band, like taking all the chicanery and bullshit and posing and all that other stuff aside, they are very, very solid.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I just think he's a huge wanker and I'm not a fan, as Gabe, it sounds like it's not either. I have to choose to overlook the white boy flexing bravado, insecure, you know, just the constant, I'm amazing. Like, I don't know.
There's also just, I mean, like it's nothing different from a lot of just straight up rap out there where
100%
total misogyny and just, you know, ridiculousness on that part. The fact that he thinks that he's saying something is really hilarious because, you know, he has like two topics.
Maybe three, but yeah.
Like if I'm going to listen to this band, I wouldn't listen to this record. Just, I'd put it that way. You know, even that last record, Significant Other, which I didn't review with you all, that is like, it's so much more successful in terms of the way that it pulls in hip hop. Like this is more hip hop in the sense that they pull in more guest stars. It's like here's some people who are also professional rappers, which is, you know, good for Limp Bizkit. But I think that the experience is much more interesting listening to Significant Other, and even more interesting for me, like, you know, back in the day, I was listening to $3 Bill, y'all, because it was so fresh.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah, I agree with all that, too. I do.
I was so impressed with Wes Borland back then. Like, I was just like, who is this dude? What is he doing? Also, Black Contacts, you know?
Indeed. I'll get $3 Bill, y'all, on the schedule. I've, like, closet commando blasted the, you know, just going to slowly roll these out. We got Gold Cobra.
I mean, your Iocane powered us to him, because I don't think you could just drop a blast of Limp Bizkit and us walking.
I was going to. I had it on, dude, I had my list of blasts. I was going to inflict on you. I was like, well, because like the ones, most of the ones that are left.
I don't know. That maybe me and Gabe are just like, yeah, we're out. Just that'd be much of a.
I admit I kind of got off the ride after this, but I kind of got off a lot of rides after this just because of the time frame and like the changes in my own life. But God, for like, again, they were like arguably the biggest band in rock and roll. And You can laugh at that and sneer at that if you want, but there was a reason that from like 98 to 2001, people were wearing backwards red fucking baseball caps and white t-shirts all the time.
And like, yeah, like this is the perfect like white boy aesthetic that made like every fucking high school around this time. Like I was in middle school going into high school and just the Fred Durst look was the look that people went for. With the silver chains as well. Like the chain was also part of the look. Man, that this album I think was a force in itself.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was simply going to say, we don't have to go too far down this rabbit hole either. I was like, what was my experience with this? I was in grad school already because I'm old. And when this album came out, so much of what I was doing was so cerebral and nerdy and intellectual, at least, or it pretended to be. This is not that. No. Like, I think one of the reasons I liked this at the time is it was like, I'm now going to unplug from thinking about the discourse and just think about, I don't know, being awesome on top of a skyscraper or whatever it is we're doing here.
This is,
I
mean, like very id, well, not id, ego. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Indeed.
I think the word you're looking for is air raid vehicle.
I think air raid vehicle is the...
that is in your Air Force Ones.
Oh my God. I can't. I've lost the ability to even. Headshot, killing spree. Yes, what you said, Gabe.
Yeah.
And more like, just put in perspective, like this album, like if any time I think of like a promotional video, My Way, this song done for Rock for Stone Cold for Christmas 17 is always pops into my head. Like that is set in stone of like the best promotional video of all time for any like event or anything. Like I think it's one of
the I mean, I'm not sure how much they actually had to do with that, but
well, just the tying of the two of just how much ingrained it is to me.
Sure. I mean, but I also want to, and I mentioned this earlier, but I want to come back to it and how quickly this album came out, because the other one came out in June 1999, and this comes out in October 2000. So,
yeah, it was an incredibly crazy flip, because that time for bands like Seven Dust or whatever really had stretched to about 3 years. Sometimes if it was Tool, it was like seven. And so to bang these out like this really is part of, I think, how their reign of terror took root in this era, right? It was overwhelming force. But then Borland left, and as Tracy notes, the next album is not that good. And I think there was just a changes in the market related. We've talked about this over and over. I think the 9/11 thing was not just bad for a band like Rage Against the Machine. I think the whole tone shifted, and this was Air Raid Vehicle was actually a thing that was happening. So it just played differently, I think.
Yeah, I think 9/11 just changed the music industry as a whole. Like we've talked about a lot before, but I mean, even like music industry went from, hey, we're going to do all this aggressive stuff and like transgressive even to, and now we got to play it safe. Here's Toby Keith.
Here's Toby Keith, boot. So far.
Speaking of bro country. Yes. Anyway.
Bro country.
Yeah.
I wish this album weren't so long. I can't believe no one is like, why did you do this? And I know a lot of it is like dumb fluff, but we like the outro. How long is that thing? 10 minutes? What the fuck?
Yeah. It is 10 minutes, and I need to skip it when it starts.
Yes,
I only listened to it a couple times when I bought it, and then it was over, right? Like, I listened to I would just start it. I would just rewind it or whatever, fast forward it, so it would flip around. I wouldn't listen to that shit.
Yeah.
And I love Ben Stiller, but what?
Like, I tried to listen to it when we first, like, this came, all right, outro. And then, like, minute six of Ben Stiller laughing. He's like, what the fuck are you doing to me?
It's just obnoxious. I get it. It's the era of the hidden track, but even more obnoxious. Yeah, so drop was, it.
Like, a skip. And so, like, that's immediate, like, 9-10 minutes cut off this album for a minute, hour four. Like,
just... Yes. And I would also argue that It'll Be Okay and Boiler and to some degree Hold On are all the same song. I mean, in terms of, like, as Gabe noted, he only talks about two or three things. So, like, we could have cut one of those. Or, sorry, I don't want to take us straight into tracks, but
I think it is about time.
Yeah,
it feels like it's about time.
We yeah. may want to just take this one out. Back.
Do you want to lead us, Gabe? I feel like you see red.
I want to hear Gabe's specific thoughts.
I want
Gabe
to go first.
I want to hear specifics.
So I really only wrote short comments on the ones that I didn't like, except for a few, and Hot Dog was nah. So I will pick out the tracks that I, you know, have some attachment to, that I would listen to, you know, just if I put the record on again, I would skip to maybe Phil Nelson. It's very stupid, but effective. The first Roland, I think the second one's kind of, unfortunately, it's like a waste of a feature for me. And Get Your Groove On is okay. It's too bad that it's also not on the record these days. But, and I think Take a Look Around is also memorable. Like I said, because of that Mission Impossible theme in there. I would say that Hold On, I love Scott Weiland because I was a Stone Temple Pilots fanboy. But same. Limp Bizkit do not deserve him. They do not. The riff on the song is good, but the song itself is just, it's so, like you said, it's about the same thing as, you know, three other songs on the album. And yeah, Roland is very bad, but it's also good.
Indeed. That is exactly, yes, that. What he said.
I will have to say, and I guess I'll go ahead and go next, that Roland is the perfect song for certain situations.
Agreed.
And that situation is generally just hanging out with your friends being incredibly stupid or just driving around. You know, but as the songs that I actually like, man, this album's way, way too long. And I'm not really going to add too much more other than what Gabe said. Hot Dog is funny in a juvenile way that, like, comes and goes, whether I actually like it or not. I do actually kind of like My Generation. My Way is good. Take a Look Around. Scott Weiland's performance on Hold On makes that a song that I would listen to. And that's pretty much it.
So I'm going to come next. All of them.
Oh, shit.
And in fact,
did not expect that. All of them twice.
So in fact, even like younger Tracy liked Air Raid Vehicle more than Urban Assault Vehicle. But as I've gotten over, I tend to lean more towards Urban Assault than I do Air Raid.
You're maturing.
I think it's also Method Man, Redman, and DMX.
Yeah, you're damn right it is.
Yeah.
But all of them. Just take the fucking ride, except for outro. That shit can be shot into the sun.
I'm going to give you more detail than you want. Hot Dog's okay. I mean, it's a silly hook, but they often open with silly hooks. My Generation, I think, is where Fred tries, Gabe, to tell you important things, right? Like, that's, I think, one of those.
No one cares about Our Generation.
No one cares about Our Generation, man. We like burn down an entire town and no one cares. Full Nelson, I know that song is just absurd, but also awesome. I like that song a lot. My Way is Fred Durst. I assume my way is like Desiderata. Like, it's like behind his front door. It's just that engraved, like how awesome I am. Roland is just fucking good. Both versions. I have so, like, almost no Limp Bizkit is on most of my playlists except those songs. It's like those two and a couple things of Significant Other. Living Up is just fun. The one is, the more and more of that happens from here and later albums when he sort of tries to down tempo it. And I mean, by the next album, is that the one with Behind Blue Eyes? I think it is. Yeah, indeed. Get Your Groove On is fine. I like Exhibit, but I have a lot of trouble not thinking of him Pimping My Ride, and I hate that because I listened to him before that, but then in Ethiopia we only had Saudi MTV, and apparently the only thing that the religious courts would allow was Pimp My Ride, and so we saw so many episodes of that, it was like on 24/7. Anyway, that is a tangent you didn't need, but you're welcome. The Mission Impossible thing is super hooky and catchy. It'll Be Okay, Boiler, and Hold On, pick any two. I don't know. They kind of talk about the same thing. They're both, you know, I know he hurts, but it comes off as kind of whiny. I don't know. I don't know if they deserve Scott Weiland. I like Central Pilots a lot too, but that's probably the best of those three. We've already talked about Roland. Outro, just delete. It's just not needed. So I guess I need a lot of those that I like. I like this record. Maybe slightly less than Tracy, but we'll see what happens during grading.
We will see.
Before we move on, I have two hot takes. Hot take number one, Scott Weiland's solo album was better than anything Stone Temple Pilots did. And Exhibit's first two albums were fucking great.
They were. 100%. That's why I feel guilty that I think about a Dodge Charger with like purple flames when I'm like, he was he's like a real artist, man. And
like, I know, and like three TV screens in it that they would put in. It's like,
I mean, Pit My Ride probably paid better, honestly. So I save your buddy, dude. I don't know, but
yeah. But now on to the spreadsheets pick.
Spreadsheet has spoken.
Nova Twins. Supernova, released on 6/17 of 2022. It was on the label Marshall, which I'm not familiar with. I'm assuming it's a UK label. It is their second studio album. This was by Jim Abbas, the Nova Twins, and Ramesh Dandanagada. I don't know. I probably fucked that up. I apologize, Ramesh. Runtime is 30 minutes and 53 seconds. A sweet, sweet 30 minutes and 53 seconds. The Nova Twins are Amy Love on guitars and lead vocals, and Georgia South on bass and backing vocals and drum programming. They did have a live drummer for some of the tracks on this album by the name of Jake Woodward and George McDonald. They kind of split duties. Gerard Roberts also provided some drum programming as well. So, Tracy, why this album?
Well, our virtually put an album here called Cheap Love to the Rat by the Rats and the Wolves. And I listened to it and I was like, man, this sounds not that good, actually. And it kind of like, I'd been like 3 years since I listened to it. Cause there were a couple tracks like, man, I really dig, but I don't know why I like this song. And then it's like, okay, this sounds not good. I remember hearing this one from last year. And I was like, or actually, I got to it late last year. And like, oh, I need to check it out. And listened to it early this year. And this album is just like, when you hear it, it's just this amalgamation of what the fuck, like pop that's going on with it, but it's catchy as shit. And these women bring it along with it. And I was like, okay, cool. And I would never have actually kind of seen this in my wheelhouse prior to it. So I'm like, okay, this is something definitely like almost not my subgenre ish, but it's also like, I'm in.
Man, I eat this shit up. Like, I loved Republica and fucking MIA and Lady Sovereign, all this British, slightly metally, crunchy hip hop is happening. Grime is happening. This is such a London thing. And I was really pleased by it. Like, I was like, what even is this? Okay. From like, you know, Antagonist on, I was okay, sold, done. I'll buy two.
Yeah, you know, I figured, when I heard it, like, David would fucking love this.
They have this whole DIY thing because they do most of the shit themselves. I'm 100% sure they will kill me with a shovel and move on, which I'm okay with. I mean, they seem, I don't know how, we'll see. I'm a little frightened about what our two hombres are going to say. The bad hombres. coming out of the waste of Cleveland, but.
No, I mean, I thought this was actually pretty cool.
Nice.
And I really had no idea what to expect. I think that the strength of this is that it really takes everything really short and sweet.
Indeed.
And the play that they're doing with the genres doesn't get stale that way. It never stays in one place for too long. And I really, really appreciated it. And I can also see how this might be a guilty pleasure, but I think that it would be perfectly suitable for your non-metalhead friends. And, you know, it's very catchy and it doesn't come across as too aggressive. Even though there is some aggression in there, but in the sense of like, it doesn't attack you as a listener. It's more just like fun.
But again, if you listen closely to some of these lyrics, you're going to get hit in the head with a shovel.
You're going to get killed. Yes.
You're going to get killed. Just to put that out there explicitly.
See track four.
Yeah, dude, I love that fucking song though. Anyway, but we're not talking about songs. Hit us, Ben.
Yeah, I'm going to be the Debbie Downer on this.
I knew it.
Yeah,
hitting this with a shovel.
Hitting us with a shovel because it definitely doesn't deserve that. This is one of those things that I want to like a lot more than I actually do, because like on paper it just seems so fucking cool and they bring such energy and it is such a vibe and everything. It's just, I don't think the songs are that good. I mean, they got a lot of energy. They're over quickly. They're catchy. There's a lot going on, but I'm just like, all right, cool. And none of them just really grabbed me. But like, you know, because like David, I was into Republica and all that stuff. And so I was like, hell yeah, this ought to be really cool. And it is really super crunchy. I will have to say that it's much heavier than I thought it was going to be. But yeah, I don't know. There was just something about it that didn't quite click. And I don't know what it was.
I've never heard you. I don't know. You and I have a lot of overlap. But I think some of this London underground that stuff starts drifting in the same way that you get into sludge country and I can't follow you. It's just some corners that, I mean, it's the beauty of Thunderdome. This, that actually does, because I know there's some hook-ons here. Like when I played Nightclub for you, you were like, okay.
Yeah, dude, that's what I was thinking. It's like, you know, because again, like if you listen, this is, Code Orange. Like if you listed out everything that goes into Code Orange, David would be like, fuck yes.
This 100%. Is my band. That's my band.
Yeah. And if you list everything to this, it would be the same thing for me. But actually listening to it, it's
100%.
It's just like, the connectors just did not line up like you wanted it to.
Yeah.
Yeah. This should be my shit. That's the category.
And so when
exactly.
This is the thing. Like when I read the description, this coming into it, I was like, man, I don't know if I'll like it. But it was like, like this was number two. Like when I did that spreadsheet at the end of the year, like, all right, how many is showing up in your list? Like this was number one, showed up on the most top 10 rankings. And it was like averaged out to the, I think either the first or second spot. And I was like, fine. I'll check it out in the year. And I was like,
oh, in people's rankings, this was?
Yeah, I think intriguing. I
sure did. Oh, dude, critics love this shit, dude.
Oh, yeah. Like, let me see.
I guess critics are different. Well, we don't have to get into the GamerGate corners of metal because there's some of that, obviously.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't know that anybody in metal has written about it, but I'm just talking rock critics in general.
Yeah.
So, let's see.
I'm pleased to hear that. Yeah, that also means the world has changed at least a little bit from 1988. 100%. Right? Because no way. I mean, if you weren't Lita Ford, I don't know if you weren't.
Yeah, oh, this yeah. thing was like.
Stevie Nicks. I don't know. There were breakthroughs. You know what? We don't need to talk about misogyny.
One at a time.
One at a time. Drip, drip.
Yep.
Yeah. But, yeah, like, so this album was just like this weird, like, okay, here for it moment for me. So.
Well, I'm sorry it didn't line up, Ben. I do know your pain because I get as exactly as you say, Code Orange. If I were reading the description on a cereal box, I'm like, I'm buying this shit. And then,
Well, I don't want to skip ahead, but I'm going to because I will buy this because I want more shit like this out in the world, even if it's not, even if my personal grade of this isn't that high. But there needs to be more people like this doing
100%
this, you know. So, yeah. Tracks.
I was going to just add one other thing. Obviously, we don't have to go too far into this, but Britain is its own heinous bullshit right now in terms of people of color and how far it's turning authoritarian. So there's, I think, some of this energy and anger you're perceiving is precisely that they have chosen stupid, perhaps. They're perhaps one of the only societies, I think, that's chosen it even harder than us. Mm-hmm. So in terms of just like they've literally sawed their own legs off. I mean, it's pretty spectacular. And it's getting really hostile. And so, you know, I don't pretend to know their life. And Black British are, you know, this on the one hand, like monuments came down and there was like a bit of a reckoning. But I think they're now in a backlash moment like we are. And it's so, you know, I have great respect for how angry they are and where some of that's coming from. It's a pretty somewhat specific to Britain context that is just
totally they have a right to be angry. Ooh, I just think the music didn't come across.
For sure. Like, I just think something needs to be said because sometimes we talk about this stuff as if it comes from a socially neutral universe, but you know, London in 2023 is a fucking battleground in terms of the soul of what that country is going to be. So, and kind of always has been in some ways, nothing new under the sun looking at you, Brixton riots. I mean, you know, it's been a long road, but you know, all the disaster with the Windrush people they fucking sent back. I mean, Jesus. Well, anyway, Britain hurts me to the core of my being as a society I know fairly well and used to really love visiting. I still like visiting, but it's messed up now.
Well, and speaking of their anger and their politics, there's a reason that Tom Morello called this one of the best bands that nobody's ever heard of.
Yes. Afro solidarity. Global solidarity. Exactly. 100%. MIA, when she's not denying the abuse of vaccines. Damn it, MIA. Anyway, it's hard. It's a war zone out there, man. But anyway, so yes, let's talk about tracks. I just wanted to say something about just the complete fuckery that is them being alive. Because this album isn't from 2012. This album is from 2022. So, anywho, who wants to talk about sounds? We sort of deviated a little from the person who picked it going first, but I think that's kind of cool. Gabe, maybe? Gabe? You haven't gone first yet, have you?
I guess I can go again.
You did go first. I couldn't remember. I apologize.
Yeah, someone else can go. That's fine.
Is it? I'm not sure. Have I gone first yet? I'm going to go first. No, I'm, not. I'm, I'm gonna go first. So I mean ultimately at 30 some minutes, just take it. So let's see if that all of them. First of all, this whole thing is fun. It goes quick. I listened to this album a fuck ton in the last 3 weeks or whatever, because we put it down and picked it back up. Antagonist, it starts hard. I really like Cleopatra. That's a Burn the British Museum Down type moment. Track four, KMB, that song. This is how I know they're going to kill me for my sins, past and present. Middle album's fine. I like A Dark Place for Summer Beautiful. It's pretty good. Choose Your Fighter is fucking badass. I like that song a lot. And Sleep Paralysis is a... The ending, I mean, it ends pretty dark, actually. It kind of dissonant, and it's certainly not an upbeat ending. But this whole record was really fun. It was my favorite of the week, including Hot Dog. I don't even feel guilty about this. This isn't guilty at all for me. This is an album. Look at
this. This is a David album.
This is a David album. No, this is check and check, right? I mean, you know how I feel about Poppy, or that record's coming out. Mm-hmm. And we're doing it, I think, right? I think I did put it on.
Yeah, I think we did.
Yeah, we're doing it.
I will go ahead and go next. I will say again, this with this album, like, just listen to all of it. There's so much going on here that you're probably going to find something that you like it better than I did. If I were to like list tracks that I was going to pull off for a playlist, it would probably be Antagonist, A Dark Place for Somewhere Beautiful, and Enemy.
All of them, but the one that really kind of got me like, oh shit, was Puzzles. Like hearing that first time, and like that kind of like clap. Beat that it has going on with it as well. I was like, oh shit, okay.
Yeah, I'm gonna say Take the Ride. And my favorite part of the record, no doubt, is like the first five tracks. And I wanted to shout out especially Cleopatra, because it made me think of a German female rapper who goes by Lady Bitch Ray, and she's also got a track called Cleopatra, which is about something completely different, but it's awesome. And AMB track four, just listen to it. Just put that on repeat. You'll just like get so fired up.
You will. You'll do things. You'll commit crimes for justice or whatever it is you are into.
Tells you.
See, Tracy, that went over pretty well.
I figured safe with that album going into it. Like, I know it's been so many episodes, so many albums. I know the crowd reaction whenever it gets picked. I'm like, I know how, like, almost how it's going to break.
Sure.
It's when it doesn't break that way when I get the shocked Pikachu face. Like, huh? you were supposed to like it, David. And just
and I hate it. Yeah. When has that happened recently? I'm sure it has.
You know, and the shock being true faces when Gabe likes it. That's when it's also like, what?
It sounds like there's some of that coming up. That album, you're like, I'll take it off. Gabe's like, don't. Then Ben said, don't, because I'm not listening to more shit.
Indeed.
He was just talking about that.
I'm not willing to listen to more shit. It's just I've already listened to that shit.
I've listened to that shit.
Been like, you could face it, but I'm talking about this album.
It's like still in the episode talking about the other Apple. Yep.
Sorry, I had to get onto my cat. So yeah, next, Gabe's choice, which is Gabe, Midnight, Let There Be Witchery. Released on March 4th of 2022. This is his fifth studio album. It was released on Metal Blade Records, had a runtime of 34 minutes and 44 seconds. Jamie Walters, also known as Athanar or Gabe.
Or Gabe.
Like everything, and I don't really mean everything. This is not one of those things where somebody plays everything but the drums. This guy played everything, including
the drums. Yeah. All the things.
All the things.
Three albums in a row he recorded in the pandemic. This is the first of three. There's like, it's the three chambers are already loaded. That's what he said. He's like, everyone else is really sad about the pandemic, but I'm the entire band. And I'm gay.
I mean, case in point, how can you be sad when it's the pandemic and you're the entire band and you have to do band practice? Like,
you just do band practice by yourself.
Exactly.
Every part.
So I forget how I first heard of this band, but it wasn't because I live in the city where the guy is operating. But I think we watched the video for Sex Witchery. And either before or after that, I listened to the album and I was like, okay, this is very, very silly. And I also kind of like it. Like, and It ended up on my, album of the year honor roll, honorable mention list for that year, along with a slew of other records. But I mean, for anybody who hasn't heard this yet, this is Black and Thrash, or maybe Black / Thrash from Cleveland. It's stupid, horny, like fun, just like short, very catchy, if a little bit repetitive. Like, it's just got, I mean, I don't even listen to Black and Thrash. Like, it's not totally not my genre, but it's just like quick and dirty kind of punk rock stuff. And yeah, I thought I'd see how you all reacted to it.
It's Black and Thrash if Motley Crue was writing the lyrics.
Sure.
100%. There's a lot of glam in this.
That's shocking about the glam.
So much secret glam.
This reminded me also a lot of like Motorhead, just in general. Just
100%.
Like,
oh, yeah.
Because, like,
without a doubt.
Because you get such like the like reverb, I guess, is where the blacking aspect comes up. Because, I mean, it's not like super sped up, like frenetic pace almost. Mm-hmm. Or like, it's just got this super distortion on the guitars, but it's got this plain like Motorhead like three-piece drum groove behind it that just kind of reminds me also a lot of like High on Fire, of a very similar style as they do
for sure
here. And I mean, and then you get Motley Crue lyrics on top of it.
Let there be sodomy.
Yeah, I mean, I just want to, this is apropos of nothing, but like the promo shots of this guy are amazing, because it's him with like a fucking hood on so you can't see his face. He's wearing a bullet bandolero and a leather jacket and holding a machete. It's in a graveyard. So it's like,
and the guitar is on fire. And
I mean, what you picture.
Gabe's wife is the photographer. It's a mom and pop shop.
Gabe is in a field with a machete.
I mean, this is one of those things that I really like, but I really like in small doses. And granted, 34 minutes and 44 seconds is not a super long runtime, but I mean like of a track or two, because the silliness gets to me. It's kind of like the Black and Thrash version of Steel Panther or some shit. I'm just like, I'm here for a track or two of it, but I got to take a break, man. It's just, but I will say, for a dude playing all the instruments, it sounds really, really good.
It does. And, I agree with that.
You know, I think he has... this might sound sacrilegious, but like, I think he has a better understanding of how the parts of the band are supposed to interplay with each other than some other guys who are releasing one-man bands.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I'm quite harsh on that often, but here I think it sounds fine. The one writer problem, much less one player.
I mean, it is one topic, if you will. And but I don't think that it's... I kind of see where Ben's coming from. And, you know, this is also not an everyday drinker for me. No, I would say it's, but that said, like it holds my attention fairly well, even after repeated listens. So,
oh, dude, the riffs are great. I mean, the riffs
are, they're catchy as shit. And I am definitely going to listen to this around Halloween, because it's that vibe in spades in terms of like a little silly, little murdery. Profane. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's Gabe.
Like, yeah, if I had listened to this when I was 17, this would have been my favorite fucking band.
Amazing. The greatest. Because
like it's profane, but it's like, yeah, it's just like it's all it's like all the things that like you're not supposed to be into, and it's very illicit in that way.
Just slightly sacrilegious.
Yeah. Slightly, man. I read his description of what these songs mean. Like one of them, he's like, the molestation is happening in both directions. Do you understand? I'm like, what the fuck? He's like unbalanced. It's not okay.
What are you actually talking about, dude? I want to know?
I wanted to see the face of the Apple Music, you know, intern, whoever was interviewing me, like, what the fuck? Was he in get up at the interview? Like,
oh, dude, I hope so.
Guar committed. This is
very much in that lane too. The Guar
100%.
And sneak peek, we're going to be doing a Brujeria blast, and like that is also very much along this.
100%. In a more of a Juarez mass murder sort of way. Yeah, yeah. But yes.
So like, it's not like this is so far outside of of what I like listen to, but there's an inherent silliness that is sometimes in Gwar, despite the fact that Gwar is much more over the top, which is actually impressive because this is pretty over the top. But yeah.
Sex witchery.
I think the consistency of this, I think, kind of at times, like compared to what we got with Gwar when we did it, I was considering it was also like 12 fucking albums, like just pour down our throats.
Your fault, so. Tracy.
Thanks, Tracy. You're welcome.
I'm always going to remind you, it was not my idea. I even tried to warn you. I'm like, are you sure?
So, like, while this is like the absurdity of it's a little bit higher, but it's also like more consistent in terms of style. Like, it kind of helps out. Like, even in like just an album of Gwar that was so like dispersed and different, like with Gwar, War Party, and like Ragnarok, and just Lost in Space is like just like, what the fuck's going on? But this is just like, and here's just some sort of satanic like sex cult. Have fun.
Yeah. I mean, it's also like, you know, there's no political undertones here, as far as I can tell, which is also, you know, maybe something that you could find attractive about Gwar, because they're subversive in, like, you know, overt and less overt ways.
This is one of the things I like about Gwar.
Not to mention, yeah, like, you know, what kind of a stage show can you really have with one person? Can you really have, like, a plot line? you know, like you can with, like, you know, executing presidents on stage and whatnot.
Exactly.
Someone
asked
it. Yeah. I mean, that, I guess that's one of the things that, of him like obscuring his face, although like we can find what he looks like if you try hard enough.
And you know what he looks like. He's on this call.
Looking at him right now. But,
like, look at him right now. The call's coming from inside the Zoom.
But, you know, in his publicity photos, you could kit out the rest of the band in that.
Easily. That's what Skin does, because there's like also a drum. It's admittedly only one more person, but as they scale up, they just get mask everyone. Mm-hmm. Or Poppy, right? That's her shtick. Like, who were any of those guitarists? We'll never know. They're all dead.
Behemoth and Ghost do that too. So,
Behemoth did that shit in Cincinnati, dank ass July or whatever month that was. Yeah.
Like,
it's 120 with humidity, and they're just like, they're doing it.
Yeah.
Poor Satan.
I hope that they have like somebody who cleaned that before they had to do their next show.
Catastrophe. Sex witchery.
Tracks.
Who hasn't gone first? Tracy?
I think Tracy hasn't gone first.
I'm Ron Burgundy.
I couldn't remember if I went first on Hot Dog or not.
No.
Okay.
No, because he would have said all of them and then ended the Zoom call to prevent subsequent reviews.
Sure. Okay. So
you got disconnected, yo.
So like all these tracks take the ride, but if I had to say the one standout is Sex Witchery, like that track is fucking fantastic.
So good.
It's tight.
Because I get kind of it wears on me a little bit. It is kind of repetitive. I would say the same thing about some Motley Crue records. Anyway. But then Sex Witchery at the end just like grabs you and punches you in the stomach repeatedly. So that song is so awesome. That video is ridiculous. If you've not seen it, listeners, please check it out. Yeah, I mean, it's so short. Just listen to it or don't, right? Those are your two choices. Either do this knowing we've warned you or don't do it at all. Or don't do it at all. But yeah, this is fun. That Sex Witchery is a completely badass song. I also like, I don't know, the rest of them all of them are fun. I mean, they're all pretty similar, if we're being honest here.
Yeah.
The riffs in all of them are super catchy. I mean, again, if you like one of them, you're probably going to like all of them, but the best one's the end, the finale. He said he went to Budapest and he and his friends could not stop laughing at how they spelled things, so that's how this happened.
That actually that's makes
the
kind sense.
Of the seriousness with which he approaches his material. It's craft. Anyway, I mean, again, it's way better than any album I've ever put out.
So that's where is that how you came across the name of Gabe? For real? Or you just said that in an interview?
Yeah, Gabe. When you were in Budapest.
Actually, interesting story. Budapest is one of the only places I've been to a strip club in the world, which is hilarious.
Exactly. Somewhere.
Well, that dude, that is not dispelling the myth that this is you.
Yeah, you're just not helping. Oh, I just happened to be there, and I was laughing at how things were spelled. I'm sorry, I heard it being said that the spelling is funny.
Yeah,
Pump yeah, after Budapest Titty Twister or whatever.
You just don't know when to quit, do you, Gabe? You're looked up on the evidence.
Wall, and there it was.
Well, I'm glad you had that experience, and I'm glad it led to this album.
I will say all of them as well. It's short, take the ride. I would say, again, my proviso about, like, I only want to listen to a couple of these at a time. It's still true. But I think that, like, in a vacuum, if you put on any of these, I would be like, hell yeah, as long as I didn't have to then listen to the rest of the entire album.
Sure. Amazing.
Okay.
Perfect
well,
for radio.
I would say just take the ride too. All of them are cool. I also would shout out Nocturnal Molestation. It's just a super, super catchy song.
It is.
There's no denying it. And I think the opener is really great too. But yeah, it's really short. Just take the ride.
Oh man. A lot of different bases covered this week.
It was a very divergent week, and it was a fun week. So
it's a grades.
It is time for grades.
It is indeed time for grades.
Vermilion Whiskey, Crimson and Stone.
I thought it was good. I didn't think it was great. I'm in the bag for this kind of metal, so I'm going to give it about a half grade bump over what I think I would give it if it wasn't my genre. But I'm going to give it a B.
I'm going to come in just barely behind that for a lot of similar. This will not surprise you, given I like music like this nearly as much as Ben. I'm going to give this an 83. Still a B after all these years.
I'm going to come in just slightly behind that at a B minus as well, but I'm going to give it an 82.
Yep, that's right where I'm at. I'm okay with about half this record. And, you know, I'm really mad about the other half. So
that gives us an average of 83. Would you buy this album, gentlemen?
Yeah, probably.
Maybe. I don't know. Maybe.
I might. I think I probably would, knowing me. But a lot depends on what I had heard and how I'd heard it. That's an interesting thing to ponder, given the way they layer this album. But anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would ponder getting the last four tracks, and that's it.
See? I can't even imagine that world. You always do that, and I always feel like it's a cheat. I'm like, how dare you, sir, use your Napster technology to select songs?
It's called Bandcamp, dude.
Bandcamp, totally. Indeed. It's just, I was talking earlier about the one track versus... Yeah.
I'm sorry, David, I interrupted you.
It's all good. No. Go off. Do it.
Limp Bizkit, Chunk of Starfish, and Hot Dog Flavored Water.
Look, I know I shouldn't, and it probably reduces me the level of Philistine, but I'm giving this a fucking B. I bet Tracy comes in higher, so I think I'm going to give this a solid B because it's got some real bangers. It's ridiculous, but, you know, I liked it then and I like it now. I'm not going to maybe advertise that super widely, but yes, B. Though I guess we just did. We're putting this out on the interweb.
I'll let Ben and Gabe go first.
Before you blow them away.
I mean, that, to the shock of no one, I'm going to give it the same grade David did. So
for some of the same dumb reasons.
Exactly. I mean, because the good stuff on there is so good.
So good.
It's terrible. It makes up for all the ludicrous bullshit like that.
It's an
fucking outro hidden track.
It's an air raid vehicle.
Gee, it certainly is.
Well, I think I'm not going to go that high because
I believe you.
If I had to choose a Limp Bizkit album to listen to all the way through, it wouldn't be this one. I think this one is for fans only. You're only going to listen to this whole record if you're a fan of the band. But otherwise, you might hear, you know, what you would hear kind of casually, which is Roland. So I'm going to give this a C+.
Fair enough. That's kind of higher than I was expecting. So I'll take it.
I could give it a C, but if I were to do that, it would mean I didn't like as many of the tracks as I, enjoy listening to. If you like, you know, so.
And now the moment y'all been waiting for. My grade. I'm giving this thing an A, 95.
Yes. Amazing.
Like I grew up on this album. Like it's part of my psyche.
Can we get a slow clap for Tracy?
I know. I want to stand up.
It's 95. Just Boom.
195. Yeah, well, good job, Limp Bizkit.
Big Jacksonville will be sending you a money order soon.
Geriatric millennial for the win. Indeed.
A money order that is a fake money order.
Money order. I feel like geriatric millennials just push this to the top, right? Like that's.
Yeah, I mean.
Covered in glitter and boob sweat.
This is, if there is a millennial album, it is this fucking one.
Yeah. Well played. What does that give us an average of a Q 86. Minus?
So it's 86. But here's the bigger thing. It took my average from like my year average so far. So the 11 albums we've done so far this year, it took it from an 86 to an 88 for my yearly average. But yeah, average of 86 so far for the year, or average for 86 for this album. Would you buy it, gentlemen?
Dude, I did, and now I would look around and make sure nobody was watching. I would do it again.
I did, and I would. Too,
man. I sure did.
I would not.
Yeah, I absolutely not.
I mean, God. Significant Other was so awesome that I went out and bought $3 bill and this.
Yeah. So how do you do?
This more than Significant Other.
You do. Oh, I get it. It's a moment of life. We've talked about this a ton. Yeah. When you plugged in, which one you heard the most. I mean, your brother not killing you in a car. That's significant, right?
Hell, I listened to Significant Other this week as well. After listening to this, Chuck of Starfix just randomly. And I was like, yes, I don't think, like, it's good. But just for me, it just doesn't hold up mentally.
Okay. Well, interesting. So yeah. That's why there's four of us.
Yep. Nova Twins Supernova. This album was a pleasant surprise for me when I found it. I'm gonna give it an A-92.
I'm gonna give it an A- as well. I really like this a lot. Good job, Tracy. It's good shit.
Well, I'm gonna go ahead and provide the floor so that Gabe can come up with somewhere towards him. I'm gonna give this a C+. Sure. I understand that I should like it. I just don't quite like it that much.
You're allowed. That's how it goes. Taste. The customer is always right in matters of taste.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I can see that. I like this. I don't like it as much as you all, but I like it. I'll give it a B+. This also, I think, would not be an everyday one for me. So I think you're going to, you know, see me come back to it, but probably not as frequently as some of the records that I just, you know, would bump up to an A.
Yeah. That gives us an average of 87. Would you buy this album? I would.
Oh, for sure. In an instant Virgin Megastore. Just big. Yes, I would.
So, yeah. Already said I would.
So interesting thing. I would not have bought this album without hearing it first. Like it would have been an album I had to.
Oh, dude. Yeah. I would not have known it existed if you hadn't like.
Well, I mean, like.
They look like astronauts. I get it. Like, what's even happening?
In the term of like just purchasing it like then compared to now, like I wouldn't even bought this album because it would have been nothing would have checked what I wanted to care for. It would have been like, I don't know. But then here
it tells you something about marketing and how it's all fucking with you, right?
Yeah.
It's like The Voice, right. Except it's a metal band behind you that's performing.
All right. Gabriel Cooper, Let There Be Witchery. Oh, I'm sorry. Midnight, Let There Be Witchery.
By Gabe
Cooper. So I think we lost the thread that Ben actually did Vermilion and Whiskey, which I think I'd like to point out right now that that's actually
for the record.
One of his many side projects is creating albums that are one half sludge and like 50% Southern rock.
By law.
Yeah.
By law.
It's the Kentucky and the Louisiana connection, man. It's what it is.
Must be.
Bottle and bond rules fly here.
Exactly.
So this is a whole lot of fun. I'm gonna give this a high B+.
I mean, I'll come ahead. Go ahead. I'm going to give this a C+ again, just because of the fact that I like the individual songs. I would probably rate a little bit higher than that, but the aggregate drags it down because of the sameness and the silliness.
I'm going to come up a bit because I like things like Guar. I don't know. And I really want to support Gabe in his career. So I'm going to give this an 82. Solid 82. The Coward's Refuge. Tracy looks confused.
Yeah, he's lost in the sauce. I don't know what's going on.
No, like for some reason,
the spreadsheet.
There is one cell on this spreadsheet that is a different font. And I was like, why is it changing?
And so Tracy already called Microsoft and is programming a workaround. Like, and
I'm sitting here looking at it like, why are you doing this?
He's deleting the schedule, starting over.
Yeah, he's going to fucking remake it all over again.
We're starting over.
We have to start over.
We got to redo
it. Episode one. Metallica's kill them all. Anyway, okay.
It's fixed. Ooh. My obsessive compulsiveness is taken care of. It is how it should be.
How would you grade this?
I would grade this. I'm going to give it a B. Like, it's just a good overall fun album. I enjoyed it and had a good time listening to it.
Got a good beat. You can bug out to it.
Yep. And it ends so damn well.
It does. And two more albums coming out behind this one. So the thesis each is slightly different. We'll see. He had a lot of time on his hands. We'll know soon. He being Gabe, obviously. Who would buy this?
Me.
For sure.
I'd buy it.
I would buy this if I were in the Halloween store or in a certain mood. I don't know. It's a maybe. You know, I usually don't go below a solid B or B plus, but this is kind of fun and ridiculous. And again, I want to support Gabe's career, so.
Yeah. It's a solid maybe. Like you,
solid if I found maybe.
A solid maybe. Context matters, right? If I like were in the store and they had like a special going on, or you like bought so many and got one free, or like bought one and one was half price, I'm like, okay, I wouldn't pay $30 for it. I'd pay 15 to 20.
It's all about the deal. That's what I'm hearing.
Yeah. Contextual.
You ain't no got no Glockenspiel. We ain't got no deal. I've heard it said.
Mm-hmm. That is. No Glockenspiel, no deal.
No Glockenspiel, no deal, period. It's a deal breaker. A Glockenspiel breaker.
Yep. Speaking of deal breaker, our next grab bag is going to be courtesy of Gabe, and he's bringing back one we've done in the past called Not My Subgenre. Looking like some interesting picks there, just looking at it, so.
I don't even remember what I picked. Why don't you?
Me either. I'm like, did I even pick something?
We have all picked something. Ben, you picked Unbreakable by Primal Fear.
Oh, yeah, Dave, that's power metal, so that is definitely not.
Oh, me. Yeah, I picked something that absolutely is not my genre.
You picked Word of Sin, the Abbey. I picked In Endarkenment, Anal Nothrock, which y'all are in for a treat on that one. I'm just going to leave that out there. Okay. I think David and Gabe's going to love it. David's going to love it. Gabe may not.
Fair enough.
There's Always Blood at the End of the Road by...
Weigedude.
I mean, is that... I'm assuming that's German. I don't know.
No, it's not.
Is it Weigia, dude?
Pretty sure they're Belgian.
But yeah, Flemish.
But yeah, Belgian for crib death.
Taught.
That sounds like it's your.
I know.
Right? Like, it's like, mine, right?
One of your many sub projects. One of your many sub projects.
Definitely not.
That's definitely just on Gabe's
record. Also, if we're. It wouldn't be not my subgenre.
Fair enough.
If it were actually my project. or if I was bankrolling that project.
Look, I only went to strip clubs in Budapest exclusively. Write that down, everyone.
Sex with an SZ.
I just want to say that band name sounds like the perfect Gabe album band name as well. It's just like... But it's not my subgenre.
Which so crib death or yeah.
So yeah, that's what I meant. Like it sounds like some death metal.
Yeah, like it sounds like
I'm afraid it's not.
I wasn't.
Yeah, otherwise it wouldn't be in that slot. He's correct.
Yeah. Or he's like, I'm the
pure cerebral rot guys. I don't like this genre at all. We're like, wait, what?
He's just like, I'm the one to give you cavernous
death
and
metal.
I can skip it.
David just like puts a Slayer album in there. He's like, what? It's not my subgenre.
It's not my I put in Undisputed Attitude, guys.
It's all punk.
Awaiting the label.
Well, I think it's going to be a fun time. And
it sounds like it.
Yeah, I think so too.
Well, I think that probably wraps it up on this perhaps even more ridiculous than usual episode of Thunderdome Metal Reviews.
We're all just back in the saddle, that's why.
Mm-hmm. Just a bunch of broken bacaws in a broken world.
Bacaw.
According to Don Hornsby, that's just the way it is.
That's all right. That's what he always says.